Maybe our, was that our longest?
No, I don't think so.
So, you know, I generally listen to our podcast about as soon as you put them up. I usually load it onto my iPod and I stick it in the, on the iPod and I plug it into my radio in the car and I listen it to it on my way to work. I work about 45 minutes away from home.
You're never going to use all of that.
Okay, okay.
Get to it faster. Oh,
sorry. Okay.
We just, I listen to it on the way to work.
Okay. So,
you know, so I get out of the car, put the turn ignition.
Okay. Okay. Shut your face. So I'm listening to episode 40. Don't laugh before I start. So I'm listening to... I didn't even say anything yet.
Normally I listen on the way to work.
Well, can I just say, so I'm listening to our show on our way on my way to work?
You can do whatever you want.
Why don't you just write the down for me?
You couldn't read it when I did.
That's true. I can't read it. And my eyes aren't good enough to even read it from here. So normally I listen. I'm waiting for you to laugh.
No, I'm not going to laugh. You said normally.
Okay, I'm not going to look at you. So normally I listen to our podcast on my way to work. And I was listening to episode 44. And last week I worked in Saskatoon.
Wah, 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 wah. Hello and welcome to episode 45. I almost said 44 again. Because the show last week was so long, I thought we were still doing it.
Yeah.
No, episode 45 now.
There's an hour and 4 minutes you're never going to get back.
Of the, can we cut it down to hour four?
I don't know.
Episode 45 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. I am Alan, once again, coming to you from Vancouver. Next to me, also in Vancouver,
Adam, once again, in your apartment.
Wouldn't it be awesome if you were in Tubingen this week and random?
Just I was there and you were here?
We just flipped it.
That'd be awesome.
Like that movie where Jodie Foster trades places with Lindsay Lohan.
No.
Freaky Friday, you saw it.
Yeah. Was it Jodie Foster?
She was in the original.
Mm. It was in the remake, it was Lindsay Lohan and who was the other one? Jamie Lee Curtis.
I don't care.
That's who it was.
Wow.
Also in that movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Mm. True Lies. Okay, yeah. Moving on.
Yeah.
Much better show. So welcome to the show, Adam.
Thank you.
What did you shoot this week?
I didn't shoot anything. I shot absolutely nothing. My kids could not have been less interesting this week. So I did no shooting at all. I took a week off.
I think that's okay.
Yeah.
If you're looking at me for support.
Sure, I shot the photo challenge, but that was it. That was the only picture taking I did. How about you?
No, I was busy working all week with the video work.
Okay.
That I'm here to do. It was like long 3 days.
Of work.
Well, no, this the shooting part, the acquiring the footage, and we ended up shooting long days because I do it all myself. I mean, the people I shoot help me out, but in terms of, you know, lighting, directing, shooting, sound, and all of that, and the grip, I'm the grip as well.
What's that?
The guy who carries all the lights around.
Oh.
All the lights and all
the
stuff.
So in the real world, you would have someone do that.
You would have multiple people doing that. That's what I would like. I would like to have a massive crew.
Would you get a jacket that said grip on the back of it?
No, I wouldn't be the grip. I don't want to. Actually, being a grip is a good gig.
No, but if you were the grip, would you get a jacket?
Oh, if I was the grip, yeah, for sure.
If you get me a jacket, I'll be the grip.
Okay.
It's got to be a freaking awesome jacket.
No, they get paid pretty well because it's not the funnest job. Like, I wouldn't mind it. It's like garbage man. I'd love to be a garbage man.
Why?
You get to ride in the back of a truck?
Stinks.
Yeah, but how often have you, when you were a kid, didn't you always want to hang off the back of a truck?
No.
Your childhood was miserable.
Yeah.
I think if you're going to be outside, first of all, I love being outside. I don't care if it's raining or snowing or whatever. Being outside is the greatest.
I'm not really going to be your jacket grip guy.
Yeah, so that's all right. But, and then to be on a garbage truck, you're hanging off the back, that's cool.
Yeah.
And those guys are always in shape.
No.
What?
No, they're not.
Well, not the ones with the mechanical arms. You know the ones with the whole dumpster? No, I meant the guy who jumps off, gets the garbage,
yeah,
and throws it in. Those guys are buff.
Okay.
You don't have to, I'm
spent
saying,
a little too much time observing this.
Well, I'm just saying you don't have, like in life, you don't have to spend like an hour and a half a day at the gym if running some stupid tossing, treadmill.
Yeah, if you're tossing garbage bags all day, I hear you.
You can combine. Your workout is you're getting paid to work out.
Okay.
Just like the guys in the NHL. Getting paid to work out.
Except they're not standing on a heap of garbage all day long.
They both get in the Roxy the same time.
No, like they
skip the line.
Not.
Garbage man, there's a special garbage man line.
Right. Well, with the stink, people just wave them through.
That's what I'm saying. So that's what I'm saying, a garbage man. So right. I would like to have a grip and someone to put the lights up. Best boy.
That's
someone the electric.
Okay.
That would be nice. But I don't have all that. Audio tech would be great, but I do that myself as well. Because of the nature of the jobs that I'm here to do, it's a real one-man gang stuff. So, anyways, this week in boring stuff, it's not even called this week. That's like a trademark that we don't have.
Because I didn't have anything to talk about for what I shot this week, you thought you'd make up for it.
Yeah. Turns out it was a void that didn't need filling. Here we are. Oh, wow.
So photo challenge?
Yeah, Alan filled the gaps that didn't exist. Uh-huh. So there's that. Let's just get right into the photo challenge. Good point.
What? Which was what?
Get into the photo challenge.
Yes, okay. Yeah. So because last time we did mine first and I kind of attacked you in a sneaky mm-hmm. kind of underhanded way, how about this time we do your challenge first so that you know what I say and you can judge appropriately how mean you should be to me.
Oh, I'm going to be a jerk.
Okay.
Yeah, you've miserably failed. I haven't even seen yours yet. I'm going to tell you right now, failed.
Okay.
Fail blog. We're going to fail blog you.
So remind us all what the photo challenge was for this week.
Well, it was supposed to be your idea, but you couldn't read the cue card correctly.
Oh, yeah.
I believe it said Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
No, it was available light. Now that it was getting dark earlier because of the turning the clocks back. Which, by the way, did you set the clock in your camera yet?
No.
I meant to say it last episode, and I did a blog post about it because, wow, did I always remembered the day before, and then this year I remembered in one of my two cameras.
But if we forget, it's not like it's going to fall apart or anything, right?
You know, you have to throw it away.
Okay.
No, you can actually go ahead. Like, if the time is important to you, which it is to me.
Because, not to me.
Yeah, but see, if you're now going to compare shots or like you and I are shooting the same event, we want the which we're going to do coming up, by the way,
yeah.
next week, then I would like your okay. clock to be set because yeah. now we have two shots of the same thing. We can line up by time. Anyways, point being, you can always change your time later, like an aperture or something. You can actually shift everything by an hour if you want to. But it's better to just get it right. Now, I try to remember when I fly places because that's the jet lag kind of gets me is forgetting to set my clock. So all of a sudden, I'm shooting everything at 3 o'clock in the morning when I'm not.
Okay.
So check the time and make sure it's accurate. It'll help you. Especially, now, one other reason for this. Let's say you're getting married. You got your wedding going on. And you have all your guests. Now 95% of your guests are going to bring a camera these days. If you have everybody synchronize their clock generally close, when they submit pictures to you, you'll be able to line them all up throughout the day as they happened.
Okay, yeah.
Doesn't matter whose pictures are whose, they'll all line up in some sort of chronological order. Now, your guests won't bother. They'll say, hey, I got them a toaster, that's good enough. Where's the bar?
Yeah.
So, but if you can get them to do it, I recommend that. So this week's photo challenge, shooting in available light at night.
Okay.
So what does that mean? Oh, and handheld.
Handheld. So we wanted to make use of the IS image stabilization, because figuring that we were going to use handheld,
mm-hmm.
you're going to probably need a slightly longer time to expose the photo, in which case your IS is going to be put to the test.
Or you're going to use a fast lens.
That opens up.
If you need the shutter speed, you're going to open up really wide, which is what I did.
Okay.
So let's get into mine first. Mine's an example of shooting with a fast lens. This is my 40D. Camera with a 30mm f1.4 that Sigma makes. And spoiler alert, I shot it at 1.4 to get the most light I possibly could. ISO 1600 f1.4, which still gave me a shutter speed of around 1/500th, believe it or not.
Wow.
So yeah, that's definitely a wow. So here's a shot. This is Carrie with her bike
This looks a lot like the background of your previous image.
Other last side. Week. Across down the road, though.
Okay.
I love the Stanley Theater. Love shooting it. It's on my wall in a couple spots. So, anyways, yeah. So, how did I like this? If this is available light, what did I do?
Looks like she must be standing near a light source of some sort. So, a street mm-hmm. light? Is it a street light? Or?
It is window light coming from a store.
Okay.
That's what I look for. And I find myself oftentimes shooting in this kind of... Well, not oftentimes, but enough times to say oftentimes. I'm shooting in this kind of late night scenario. And so you take light from anywhere you can get it. Now, a lot of these storefronts really pump the light to sell their product. And a lot of it spills out onto the street. So what this one was, I don't know what it was, kind of store it was. Some sort of a women's clothing store.
Where you hang out.
Where I hang out. Thanks for making it creepy. I actually did that. I was hanging around in front, though. And
Dressed in black?
Just actually was. Yeah. Oh, no. I hadn't thought about it that way. But yeah, I was just standing there with my camera and waiting for someone to come by.
To add to the creepy factor.
Just to anybody. Yeah. You know what? When you add it all up like that, I hadn't really thought of that. But the girl working in the store, because it was all glass front store, which is kind of a key to have, you know, a lot of light spilling out.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to shoot the store itself, by the way. That's why we don't see it in there. I just wanted to steal their light. That's what I was doing. It's kind of like stealing an open Wi-Fi signal. Just grab their light.
Or videos on the internet.
Huh?
Do people do that?
What?
Forget it.
I'm not sure what we're talking about anymore. Anyways, so I standing there waiting for somebody to come by, and I stood for quite some time because a lot of people were walking by wearing their headphones, which everyone does nowadays.
Yeah.
And so I always assume that they're listening to the Two Hosers, and I do not want to interrupt them and blow their mind.
Yeah, especially if they're at the 103 mark.
It's true.
Getting right close to the end.
Like, wait a second.
Here comes the big finish.
Here it comes. Wouldn't that blow your mind, though, if you're listening to a podcast and looked over and saw one of the guys on the bus?
It would. It would blow my mind.
And you're like, man, podcasters ride the bus? Don't you guys have a car service or limos or something? I would assume you were riding around in helicopters. Mm-hmm. We do.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I'm standing there, and I was there for like probably 15 minutes because I couldn't quite find the right person. And I can't tell you what I look for in a subject when I... Because I do shoot random people quite often. It's something I happen to like to do. I ask them first. I don't like to just shoot people randomly in the street. So I like to ask people, but I don't know what it is. I find a good spot of where the light is, and then I wait for someone to come by. And I can't... I don't know ahead of time who I'm looking for, but I can just pick people off and go, nope, 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 and then yes. So it's a combination of the look they have plus will they say yes.
Yeah.
So that's what I ended up waiting for.
It's a big factor.
That's the big factor. So I waited. I like to... So I'm sitting here waiting, and I could see the girl in the store kind of staring at me wondering what I was doing. So that was kind of odd. And I was stealing your light. So that's what I ended up doing. She never asked, though. So anyway, so Carrie walked by with her bike, and she was really friendly, despite me being dressed in black, hanging out on the street. And I went to give her our card and say, hey, can I take your picture and explain what for? Before I could even say that, she just said, yep. So that was nice. So she was kind enough to kind of walk back towards me. So what I did was I found a good spot that I like where the light was. I shot a picture of my hand beforehand and got my exposure on manual setting, and then I stepped back and waited, and as she walked through, I snapped a picture exactly where my hand was so that I got the right amount of light on her face. So that light is on her face is 100% coming from the storefront.
Okay. Whew. I don't have anything critical to say, not that you care if I critique you mm-hmm. in your photos, but I like the picture, I like the bike, I like the fact that she's in black and the bike is, I don't know what color it actually is, but it looks white in the picture. So there's a good contrast there. So I like the bike shows up very clear in the foreground, and it's a direct contrast to what she's wearing. And I like the angle of that car in behind her.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that car makes the picture for me. Something about the angle of that car, and it kind of like your last week's picture. It shows kind of three levels. I like the car and the position and the bit of blur in the taillights. And yeah, and I like just like you, I really like Granville Street. I like the landmark there of the Stanley Theater. So no, I think good job.
Part of what drew me to this image was the street lights going into the distance,
yeah,
blurring
so you get
out
that depth.
But also, they already have a Christmas tree up in the chocolate store there.
I didn't even notice that, but I notice it now.
But it was a lot of lights out of that I knew it would look good out of focus,
mm-hmm.
and that sort of would kind of add something. I didn't want any dead spots really in the picture. I wanted the focus to be clear on what we're on, like what the subject is, which I think it is. But I wanted everything else to kind of be full and nothing kind of just, you know, an afterthought.
Mm-hmm. That's so deep. It's real deep.
Real deep. It is deep. You look off into the night.
See my tactic, though? When you go first, I try to pump your tires. When I go first, I try to rip you to pieces. That's how I do it.
I wasn't listening.
Okay, moving on.
All right, let's have a look at your picture. Okay, take us through what happened here.
That gentleman, I stopped in the street. Actually, that's you.
Okay, I didn't want it to be me again.
Yeah, it's all about you.
Because it was me last week.
You begged me to take your picture. Actually, because we did this at your house and on short notice, I decided to use you as my subject, and we used my kit lens,
mm-hmm.
and because it doesn't open up very wide, the IS became critical. So we went sort of down an alleyway where it looked like there was some interesting background and some light. So there's a street light overhead that's creating most of the light in this picture, and we basically I shot it at the aperture of, I think it's the 4.5 that I used, and in order to get an exposure, I had to go to ISO 1600 like you did. And then I had to go, I think we ended up at 1/13th of a second shutter speed.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, at 1/13th of a second, I had to be pretty darn careful to keep the camera steady. And then I snapped this off. And I tried to position you where I was going to get the most contrast. So if I had you over to the right a little bit, but then because of the dark images on the right side of the frame, and you were wearing dark colors, it ends up all kind of getting muddled together. So I try to position you somewhat centrally so that I could get enough light around you so that you would see your clear outline.
I love the lit up pavement around me,
and that's from the overhead street light.
Yeah, that's the street light hitting the damp roads, which is why when you watch Hollywood movies, which I'm sure you do, Transformers, yes, or whatever it is that you watch.
Sure. We talked about Transformers before.
Did we?
Decepticons.
Okay, I should have said something else. Megatron. Watch the GoBots movie.
Yeah.
No, when you watch basically every movie, every Hollywood movie, and there's a night scene, the roads are soaking wet. Even if it's set in Los Angeles where it doesn't rain, the roads are always wet.
Is that because the light pick up off of the wet? Yeah, it looks good.
You get that reflection. It just basically everything just pops.
Yeah,
and it looks great on camera. If you see the dry roads, generally it's a low budget movie because it's not cheap to water everything down.
Yeah,
and so that's why it's great. That's why Vancouver's a great place to shoot, because guess what? The roads are always wet. So.
And the reason I like this photo, we took a couple of pictures in various poses, but I like this one because you're not actually walking, but you look like you're walking.
Well, see, I thought it was a throwback to last week's. I look like I'm disco balling with your disco ball.
That too.
I am getting down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little
Having
bit.
A little fun tonight.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. Or doing the monster mash.
Yeah.
If you look closely.
You're super... your super suave pose there. So I liked it. I like the way the light hit. So that's it.
I like the depth that you created into the alley. I happen to love the alleys in Vancouver too, which is kind of why they shot the X-Files here, because it looks awesome. But they have these kind of wide open alleys, but they still look like a back alley.
And the color, ended up going black and white with this because the white balance looked atrocious.
I don't know what they're using for streetlights, but it's like they're using some sort of sodium vapor, but then they're putting a yellow filter, like a yellow gel on it or something. I don't even know what is going on. But you did. You tried to shoot in color. I tried to help you fix it, but
it didn't look good. Yeah.
Good luck. So the other good part is that that building in the background there, you know who used to live there?
No.
Sarah McLachlan.
Wow, I did not know that.
True story.
Cool.
Yeah, I didn't know her. I never used to hang out with her.
How did you know that she lived there?
Oh, everybody knows that, but really? You, apparently.
Just like Popeye Jones or whatever.
You still didn't Google it.
Do you know who Popeye Jones is?
Popeye Jones.
Here's a question for you.
Popeye Jones?
Popeye Jones.
I do. Isn't he a fighter?
No.
Isn't he?
Go Google it.
Popeye Jones?
Get back to me.
I know who Popeye Jones.
Sports fans would know. But
if it's a trick, if it's a trick and it's some porn star, no. I'll be like, oh, man.
No. You no, got it's me. Not. It is a... I'm not going to say what sport. You just go Google it.
All right.
So I'm better than you. That's what I just said there. I'm better than you.
Right, but you didn't Google Popeye Doyle.
No.
Hmm.
I will. Next week.
Yeah, right. On the thrilling conclusion to what will Adam Google?
Okay. Yeah. So what's this episode about?
All right. So who won this one? Do we have winners? I don't think we have winners. I like yours.
I like yours. So it's split
the difference. Good news about mine is that I'm not in it. Because like last week I was in it by accident, my own, and then now I'm in it again. Like this, what an ego!
No surprise that you like mine then. Because
yeah, I know I was trying to be nice about it, and then I was like, oh man, I'm in that one. So I would like to actually reshoot this one with another subject. Like I think if we really did a good job and took the time to light this, barely light it, we would get a really cool looking image here. With that kind of, in that, with
what,
that.
What would you do differently? So, just give me an example as to what's the most important difference you would try to make.
I would line my head up a little more to the left
for profile purposes.
No. Just move me physically like 3 inches to the left.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah.
So that my head is dead center down the lane.
Yeah,
That's one thing I might do. I don't know. I think what we should do one night, this is the challenge I'm going to issue. We should head out into the alley around here somewhere and basically light up a story. Tell a story in this alley on multiple levels. I have a foreground, middle ground, a background. And I'm thinking with a couple of speed lights and a few subjects, we could tell a pretty cool story.
Okay.
So we're going to do that one. We're not going to do that. That sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, it's way too much work.
Instead, we'll just listen to a bunch of audiobooks by Dr. Seuss. Yeah. Quiet. I want to hear what Horton hears.
Yeah.
So, okay, this week's topic. Let's get right into it.
Okay.
Now that we're over time. We're talking about workshops this week.
Okay.
What is a workshop? What is a photo workshop?
A place where you go to learn about photography.
We could narrow it down some more, maybe.
Well, it depends on what the workshop's about.
Yeah, generally it's a 1 to 2 or 3 day, or sometimes longer, basically a seminar, like a long, hands-on seminar on how to take pictures.
And does it get more specific than that?
No. Well, it can. It can very much. It can be about flash photography. It can be about basic photography. It can be about street photography. Oftentimes, you know, they'll get into specific areas. Sometimes it's just your basic all around, hey, I want to take better pictures. What can I do?
Okay. We've tried to go through the basics in 44 episodes so far. So
yeah, you can only learn so much from a podcast. Now, part of what I like, what I've noticed, amongst our listeners, which is really, really, I'm really glad about. That sounds terrible. Like I could,
we get the point. It's okay. You don't have to explain yourself.
All right. Someone's going to go.
Don't reword that.
Someone's going to go home. I get it. is people are getting off their couches and they're actually making photos.
Yes.
And that's kind of what podcasts don't normally do, is you listen to it and you move on. But a workshop, really, it's intensive, it's hands-on.
That's how you learn, right?
That's how you learn. So you can learn so much from a podcast, and I recommend continuing to listen to ours and other podcasts. Ours first, of course, but... If you want to get out there and really learn how to do it, you want to go and learn with a bunch of other people who are like-minded,
yep,
similar skilled, and you learn from somebody who knows what they're doing. So there's a lot of kind of workshops that you can take. So that's what a workshop is. It's a hands-on lesson.
And soon are you going to be doing this in the future?
Possibly.
I think people would like to learn from you.
Well, and you.
Well, I've already learned enough, but I'd like to learn more.
I meant you'd teach.
Oh, well, okay. Getting to that too. I think so, I can help the like-minded.
Well, okay. Getting back to what a workshop is, though, who takes a workshop? What kind of a photographer takes a workshop?
I think anybody.
The answer, unfortunately, is anybody.
Yeah.
There's various different skill levels. I mean, if I would love to take one, there's a guy named, I don't know if you know who Joe McNally is.
I've heard the name.
And David Hobby, both really, really amazing photographers.
That's the Strobus guy.
That's the Strobus guy. Yeah. They do seminars, and that's one I'd like to attend. They didn't come to Germany when I was there. And they also are very, very expensive. Worth the money, if you have it. I'd love to go and attend their seminar, their workshop.
And then your buddy from Tübingen, right?
He's a big workshop guy. And we're going to hear from Chris Marquardt. That's what we're leading into. So if you have any questions about what is a workshop, who takes them, why you should take them, what does Chris do? So Chris Marquardt, who you might know from Tips from the Top Floor, he's we'll go to his website. He does a much better job about explaining who he is than I do.
Okay.
He runs workshops all over the world. He runs them in Nepal. And then all around Germany. He's got one coming up in Tokyo. Three in Tokyo, I think, to do with the Arctic snow monkeys. He does them in Washington, San Francisco, Toronto, and guess what? He's adding Vancouver this year.
Cool.
I think that's the plan. So he's going to come to Vancouver. And so I sat down recently with Chris to have him tell us exactly about workshops. So without further ado, Chris Marquardt. Hello, here with Chris Marquardt, Tips from the Top Floor. Say hello, Chris.
Hello,
Chris. That sounded bossy. I didn't mean bossy. I meant to be inviting.
No, I'm the interview guest. I meant to be talky.
Do whatever you like. This is your house.
Thanks for coming here.
So tell me a little bit about yourself. I know a little bit about yourself.
Well, we've worked together.
Yeah.
So for all those who don't know, I'm the creator and host of Tips from the Top Floor, a podcast about photography. I'm located here in Tübingen in southern Germany. I've been doing that podcast for, I don't know, I think 6 years now. It's the longest running photo podcast in the world, and I'm planning to keep that title. So I'm not going to stop anytime soon. And other than that, I teach photography. I'm a photographer. I shoot for money and for fun. And when I shoot for money, I usually shoot digital. And when I shoot for fun, over the last few years, I've basically transformed myself into an analog shooter. So I've been shooting film. I'm not sure how sensitive the microphones are, but you might in the background hear a scanner that is just now batch scanning a roll of 35 millimeter film.
Wait, is that new?
That little scanner's new, yeah.
I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, scanning 35 millimeter on a flatbed scanner. I use a flatbed scanner, which works quite well for medium format, for large format, because the slides or the negatives are really large. But for 35 millimeter, that's just too small. So the resolution is not good enough. And it's easier if you have a scanner that you can just feed an entire roll of film in, and it just pulls them through. And it'll have to do some automatic stuff there to get the exposure right on all of those. But it's actually fairly good. It's a little reflector.
So it says here on that you produce workout videos.
Workout videos.
Workshops.
Hang on a second. workout with Chris Marquardt.
I'm going to fire my staff.
That's a type of
research.
Fire your staff.
No, you do when you say you teach photography.
Yeah.
You do photo workshops.
I do photo workshops. I've actually started doing them in 2006 and here in this very room in Tübingen. And that I was really surprised that so many people showed up for the first workshop.
Well, what is a photo workshop?
It's the best opportunity for you to learn to work out that creative muscle to actually get to do things. It's fun. It's a fun thing. A lot of people come to the workshops and they try to learn photography from books, from magazines, from listening to podcasts. I mean, just listening to a podcast does not teach you photography. It'll give you information, but you have to make this into knowledge. You have to make this into skills by doing it. So the workshops are a very interactive and very active form of photography. I teach people. Obviously, there's some classroom part to it, but the majority of the workshop is actually doing photography, exercising the techniques, learning to get basic things right, but also advanced concepts. I kick people a bit in the butt to push them outside their comfort zone. That's the only way to grow and the only way to learn is by leaving that. If you only do what you know how to do it, you won't grow. You won't get better.
Of course, they say if you want to be a better chess player, you play someone better than you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's part of the workshops. Then we do image reviews, so that people finally get a good assessment of their pictures. Because if you now go on portals like Flickr or something, I mean, the best you can hope for is someone commenting, "Nice shot."
Yeah.
And that sucks.
It's kind of ironic that, I guess, through sheer, I guess, so many people using it, it's become pointless.
Yeah, and
not pointless. I don't want to say pointless.
It's not pointless. It's a good thing to be able to show your pictures to the world. I think it builds confidence. I have people on the workshops that have never shown pictures to other people, that have been shooting for themselves just out of the fear that someone might say something negative.
Right.
So on the workshops, I try to create an atmosphere that gives everyone a chance to show their pictures in a not so hostile environment, because I mean, everyone else's pictures will also be shown. So the atmosphere is actually very nice and a very constructive atmosphere. So the criticism tends to be real, but it's a nice real kind of way. So you will hardly ever hear someone say that's crap, but you might rather hear someone actually give them a reason why they don't like a picture. And the fun thing is, by criticizing other people's work, you have to wrap your mind around why you like something. And just by doing that, you will learn a lot about your own photography.
So what typically takes place at a, like, let's say we show up in the morning for a workshop. Mm-hmm. First of all, how long do these workshops last?
Oh, they're different. The one I actually just returned from Toronto for a 2-day workshop, Saturday and Sunday. I try to time them on the weekend just so people don't have to take too much time off. Some of them are 3-day workshops. I have one in San Francisco that was we did fire and night photography, and so basically that required 2 nights. So we had Friday night, Saturday night, and then we added kind of a wrap-up day on Sunday. There's one workshop that I do with my co-host here in Germany, which is in German, and that's a 4-day workshop in an old abbey. So they basically go from 2 to 4 days.
So basically, let's talk about like a 2-day workshop.
Mm-hmm.
What can one expect? They get there, what, Saturday morning?
Mm-hmm.
9 o'clock?
9, 10 o'clock, depending. I tend to start them at 10 o'clock on the first day, 9 o'clock on the second day.
So you get there at 10,
yeah.
What happens?
Oh, just groups as a low. There are typically between 10 and 20 people on those workshops. We do some introductions. We do some... just everyone gets a chance to let others know. It's funny, sometimes those introductions, I'm very, very specific about people telling us about, or telling the group about what they do photographically. And it's perfectly okay if they don't do much photographically. There are lots of beginners on the workshops. But then also to include a hobby of some sort that they do. And every now and then we get these fun things where one guy says, "I'm a deep sea diver," and then another guy goes, "Oh, I do that too." So you have this instant social thing. So I want those to be a good social experience for everyone. And then again, they're not cookie cutters, so every workshop is slightly different. But for example, what I sometimes do is the first thing after the introduction round, which takes maybe half an hour, I sent the entire group out to shoot a picture, just to assess where they are, to give them some practice, to get some initial work to look at. And then based on that, I will typically know what the group needs and where the individuals are, and based on that and the introductions. And then we do a review, and then if I see that, wow, they're all good in terms of their eye, they see good things, but they might have some lack in technique. Maybe a lot of people, for example, use the camera without really knowing what it does.
Right.
So the basic things like getting the exposure right. I mean, if you shoot in a difficult light situation, there's a very good chance that the camera will just get it wrong. And if you want to tell a story with your picture, and I think in the end that's probably the goal for most photographers, to tell stories with their pictures, you need to have the tools to be able to tell that story. And if exposure is important for that shot, if you want to tell that dark, desolate, whatever story in a train station underpass with grass growing out, cracking the concrete, that might need a certain exposure or a certain white balance or a certain color, a mood to it. But you have to know how to get to these things, and typically the cameras in their out-of-the-box state, they just try to be smarter than you and they don't know your intention.
So most people show up with the automatic settings?
Most people shoot in some one or the other form of automatic. I do that a lot of the time. When I shoot, I often shoot on aperture priority with automatic white balance, and that is good for, I'd say, 80% of what I do. But then those last 20%, to get those exactly right, the way I intend them to be, I have to know how to switch these things off. I have to know how to use these tools and how to basically tell the camera what to do instead of the camera telling me what to do.
I find the big thing is not telling people how to do something. It's telling them that something is possible. Because they have no clue that I didn't even know we could do something like that.
Yes, yes. That was actually a session in Toronto just... last weekend in Toronto, I did this one session about exposure. That's why I brought it up, because that's so fresh in my mind. And over half of the participants, I mean, you saw their faces light up and they go, wow, now I know why I get these muddy pictures in snow. Now I know why this and that picture came out totally wrong. We then went to a little excursion. There's in Toronto, there's the old Brickworks, which is basically an industrial site. They used to make bricks there, and they preserve that well, and you can access it, and it's kind of in a preserved decaying state, and it has its beautiful dark corners with a bit of light coming from here and skimming over those bricks and bringing out those textures, and then you point the camera at it with any sort of automatic settings and it'll totally overexpose it and it'll look crap. And if you want to preserve that mood, you have to know how to do it. So that is part of what I do in the workshops. And then obviously, a lot of the participants nowadays, or a lot of photographers, I have to say, nowadays come to photography from a technical side. They come from, well, this shiny black boxes with lots of buttons on it, and a lot less photographers move into photography from the art side, from the creative side. So I'd say a large percentage of the participants has a technical background of some sort or technical interest of some sort. And so we also do a lot of creative exercises on the workshops just to make sure people actually know that it is okay to not do a rule of thirds shot, or that it is okay to get something deliberately out of focus, or that it is okay to deliberately overexpose something. These are all creative decisions, but most people, just by looking at photo magazines, you always get this, oh, this is how an histogram has to look like, and this is where you have to focus, and there are lots of haves and musts and things that once you take those crutches away from people, you will actually notice that there's a lot more to the creative side than just getting the best sharpness or the best focus.
So what kind of who should consider taking your photo workshop?
Well, I would say everyone who thinks about improving their photography by buying that new lens or that new camera. I firmly believe that money is probably better invested in education, in learning how to get the most out of what you have. I find that over the years, I have bought my share of crap. I mean, I have lenses and stuff, more than enough. But I find myself going back to the simpler tools, to the prime lenses, to even simpler cameras, just because it's not necessary to have all the latest gear. And the latest gear doesn't make me a better photographer. I might have a sharper picture with more pixels resolution, but that might still be a very boring picture with better resolution.
True. I have some similar equipment to you, and I like some of it, the expensive stuff, because it stays out of my way.
True.
Some of the cheaper stuff, I find it's a little more difficult to operate or...
Oh, I mean, I can say it. I shoot Canon, and I have L glass. And one of the reasons, it's not that I get sharper pictures. It is that I get more consistency. With an entry level, like, let's say a kit lens, 18-55 kit lens on a entry level Canon camera, you can get awesome sharpness and clarity and everything, but only in a very limited range. Only if you stop it down to f/8 or f/11. But if you want to get that same level of minimum quality, and I obviously need a minimum kind of quality for some shots. With L glass, I can get this shooting wide open. I don't have to stop down. I'm a bit more flexible. I think it's the flexibility, and I'm known for not really taking that good care of my equipment. I've taken this, the 5D Mark II that I shoot with right now, I've taken that to weird places up in the mountains, and it's been banged against rocks, and it's got its share of abuse, and it's still chugging along. I'm not sure a cheaper camera would have done the same.
Probably
thing.
Not. No.
Yeah.
And that's what, again, what I like about mine is my equipment makes, when you get the good stuff and use it properly, it can become invisible.
But the thing is, I've recently seen this video by DigitalRev.tv. They do photo stuff and photo videos, very good stuff. And they did a test where they shot an expensive glass, an expensive lens on an entry-level body, and they shot an entry-level third-party Sigma lens on a 1D Mark something Pro camera. And even the entry level camera was taking much better pictures with a good lens than the good camera was taking with a bad lens. So you can get awesome image quality even out of the most entry level DSLR these days. Really,
That's what I recommend to people, is buy the base level.
Buy the one that's in your budget. If you have to make a decision between spending more for the camera or more for the lenses, go and spend a bit more for the lenses. And by all means, get a 50mm lens, because that'll just change your life. We had a participant in Toronto, and she asked that question. If there's anything I should buy, what should it be? And three or four people at the same time turned around, 50mm lens.
Yeah.
And she's like, really? Sure. And she actually went the same day, in the middle of the workshop, she went to, what's the store called in Toronto? Henry's.
Yeah.
Awesome camera store. And she went there. She bought the 50mm 1.8 for her Nikon. And you should have seen that wide grin on her face for the rest of the workshop. Because all of a sudden, for relatively low money, you get a very sharp lens that is very bright. You can shoot in light conditions that you couldn't really shoot with a zoom lens before.
And that used to be the kit lens.
Oh yeah,
not that specific lens, but back in the old days.
Oh yeah, I used to shoot a Minolta X700. I now have one again after I stupidly sold it a few years ago when DSLRs came out, and I bought that with a 50mm lens. Yeah,
my Canon FT. I have an FT and FTB, a whole bunch of film cameras. They all came with a 50mm 1.8.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you could upgrade to the 1.4 if you wanted the great lens. But zoom lenses, I mean, I...
Oh, the one... But still, even... I mean, the 51.4 is better than the 1.8, usually in build quality and in some of the coating on the glass, less flare and these kind of things. But even the 1.8 is so much better than most kit zoom lenses, yeah, or even most lenses out there. But it's an old lens design. They just didn't have to change it, or they could perfect it over time, but there's no development effort in making a 50mm lens. The designs are proven, have been proven for many, many years. So it's just there, and it's cheap to manufacture. It doesn't use a lot of glass. I think the 50 that I have might have four glass elements in it, or maybe six maximum. If you look at today's zoom lenses, you have sometimes have 18 or 22 pieces of glass in there that the light has to go through.
So back to your workshops.
Oh, we went down a rabbit hole.
Not selling 50mm lenses here.
but get one.
But definitely get one. Show up with one. If you're going to Chris's
No, you
workshop,
don't have to.
Show up with one. No, actually, you don't. The kit lenses are fantastic.
Actually, you know what? The workshops are, for a lot of participants, they also turn out into a playground in terms of being able to try out equipment that they don't have themselves, because there will always be other participants who have this or that lens with them. So a lot of people just share stuff, and it's like, okay, oh, you got the 100 macro 2.8. I was wanted to try that out. Sure, go ahead, use it. I handed a lens to someone for an entire day because they wanted to try it out, and I was totally fine with that. I now travel a lot with my 24mm tilt shift lens, an old beaten up used one. Someone wanted to try it out. That's the opportunity.
So besides, well, that's the answer to the next question. But what are some of the other benefits that someone would get from taking going to your workshop, mm-hmm, versus reading online, mm-hmm, or listening to podcasts, or more importantly, going to like a night class at a community college?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you with all these other things, you typically don't get the social interaction. I now see the Toronto group actually coming together, back together, to do a photo walk. So they're meeting up again, doing a photo walk, and the group, a real group, has formed there. That has happened around a lot of the workshops in different cities around the world. So
typically, people don't know each other coming in.
Typically, they don't. Actually, they know more and more. Toronto had, I think, about 50% repeat participants, which was good, because then it also turns it into a bit of a, almost like a family reunion kind of thing. That's the one thing, the social interaction. Then just the fact that you get out to shoot a lot and that you get challenged. Challenging yourself is difficult. And if I'm around, I will kick your butt.
So what makes an ideal participant?
Pooh, what makes an ideal participant? Someone who's curious. Someone who's open for trying out things. Someone who's... That's a big question, because I see several hundred people a year in those workshops, and they are all different. And I've had very shy people on the workshops who then blossomed and became really, really, got really into it, and after that had no problem whatsoever showing their pictures, and before they were like very afraid to do that. I had people who, on the street photography workshops, who for the first time in their life shot a people of a stranger, and asking that stranger before they got the picture.
That's a big jump.
It's a daunting task.
Yes, it is.
It's scary to do that. And then after a while, actually, the street photography workshops, I sometimes call them therapy workshops, because you really get to force yourself to go out and do things that you haven't done before. I usually have those things. For those things, I usually have people in groups of two, so they're not alone. They're with someone else. And so you can support each other doing that. So the ideal participant, someone who wants to learn. I think that's probably the baseline.
And how many people typically show up to your workshop?
Really different. Depends on the type of workshop. I had workshops. My limit, the capacity where I still have enough time for the individual, is 20 people. 2015, 10. Totally depends on the workshop. I do some analog photography workshops here in Germany where we have not as much space. Well, actually, space is not the problem. Not enough wash basins to to work on. And those are typically limited to 6 or 7 participants, but anywhere between that and 20.
So what, I've known you for almost a year now, maybe more than a year. And you seem to know a lot about a lot of stuff. And I feel like you could teach a lot of people.
I just pretend.
That's not true. That's not true. He's lying. You're lying. No, you know a lot about a lot of things, and I feel like you could probably teach a lot of different subjects. Why photography?
Why not? Photography is awesome. I love photography. It satisfies both my sides, the technical side. I'm a techie. I used to work in the computer industry, but I'm also that creative type. I've been doing photography since I was 14. I've been a musician for a long time. I used to and still do audio productions for musicians, recordings, video productions now more and more. So I've always had those two sides. Actually, at one point in time, wanted to become a sound engineer, which didn't work out, but it was one of those things. So I have those two sides. I have the interest in technology. I have the interest in the creative side, and those two together, photography is perfect.
But in order to show somebody, I mean, there's a bunch of kinds of people. I don't want to limit it to 3 kinds of people, but there's grouchy people.
Mm-hmm.
There's people who fake enthusiasm when they go and put these on. And there's people who display real joy and real enthusiasm when they put on these kind of things like your workshop. And I know that you're the last guy. It's real. No, I can see when you go out there, and I'm sure a lot of your feedback has been that.
I mean, most people, I'm glad it comes through that way, because I couldn't just put a mask on and fake it. I'm not good at that. So I get this feedback from people who hear me or listen to me on the podcast, and when they finally meet me in a workshop, they're surprised that I'm actually like the podcast, that I'm not putting on a big fake mask.
You see, I fake it.
Yeah, totally.
I'm actually kind of, absolutely. Kind of a jerk.
in true life, yeah. In real life, you're very... No, actually not.
Adam knows that. But what sort of feedback have you got recently? Like, you were just in Toronto, and it was all over North America, right?
I was in Washington, D.C., in San Francisco, in Toronto.
Let's focus on Toronto, because I'm Canadian.
Yes.
That's really...
Oh, Toronto is awesome. All those cities are awesome, but my freshest memories are of Toronto, so Toronto is awesome too, absolutely. Monica and I, we spent 2 weeks there with our friends, Sean and Michelle, photographers, and three of those days were a workshop, and the rest was vacation, so... It was awesome because we got to see a lot of sites and a lot of cool places.
Hockey Hall of Fame?
No. I saw it from the outside several times.
That's good enough, yeah.
I'm not a hockey buff. I'm sports. What's that?
Right. What are your plans for 2012?
Ooh.
Workshop-wise. I mean, I know it's blue sky, all of that, but...
Yeah. Actually, this is a good question, because now towards the end of the year, that's the planning phase. That's when we put together... stuff for the next year. Good question. So there's definitely going to be a North American thing of some form. I'm pretty sure San Francisco will be a workshop again there. We'll not sure if we do the Street Safari or the Fire and Night workshop. That is still open. Depends a bit on the feedback. I'm quite flexible there. In Canada, I think there's no doubt that we're going to do another workshop in Toronto. And as you might know, we have briefly talked about that a while ago. There might be another workshop in Canada, in Vancouver.
Let's do it. You got to go to Vancouver.
Yeah. You've been advertising Vancouver to me a long time. And all the things I've heard about Vancouver makes it pretty clear that... I have to do a workshop there. So 2012, there is a good chance for that.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
Okay, well.
If we get everything sorted around it.
I see, no problem.
I don't, you're local, so.
Yeah, I'm dialed right in. No. But I know people who are, so, you know.
No, I think pulling off a remote workshop is always difficult because it always, the logistics shouldn't be underestimated. There's a lot that goes on around the workshops in order to make it such a good experience for the participants. A lot of obstacles have to be moved out of the way up front. But once that is done, and I'm pretty sure we'll be able to do that, Vancouver sounds awesome.
And we're back. So that was, did you learn a lot?
Yes.
You gonna take a photo workshop?
I would like to. Absolutely. Yeah. Maybe you can work me some sort of deal with Chris.
I think we can. I'll give him a talk. Talk to him.
Tell him I'll be his grip. If he gives me a jacket, I'll be his grip.
Good thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the garbage man.
Yeah, he's probably going to have, you know, old, I don't know, coffee cups or
there
something I can get rid of.
You can be part of it. I think you can be part of it. Yeah, I've never taken one in the past because for me it was, I went to film school, which is a long workshop. And then for me it was kind of a lateral move into that. And why did you never take one?
Because I had you. I had the podcast. I've been getting weekly tutorials.
That's what I would recommend. If you're not going to attend a workshop, start yourself a podcast. It seems to have worked out.
It's not that hard. I mean, look at this. appears every week. I sit here for half an hour, and then it just appears on the internet. It's amazing.
You should show me how we publish this. I'd love to know. I would love to know how you think we publish this. Adam has never seen the behind the scenes of how you publish a
podcast. No, I have seen. You showed me once, and I kind of watched sports highlights while you did it.
He showed you 10% of it. Anyways, so before we get on, close the show, challenge for next week.
Last time I tried to read the challenge notes, and you gave me a hard time.
Yeah, but so. I put it into two words this time. Still no? Rim light.
Oh, rim light.
This was your suggestion.
I forgot. Yeah.
This was all you.
Yeah. That actually was me. You're not just saying that to me.
Wasn't.
I finally had an idea.
Because you're getting into a lot of the lighting now, you're paying attention to lighting and what three-point lighting, but you don't know you're doing three-point lighting yet.
No, I do.
What's three-point lighting?
Isn't it when I use two lights, but then I use window light at the same, or any other available light, sunlight? Isn't that
so? Like I said,
points?
You're doing three-point lighting, but no, 3-point lighting is just the simple lighting. Is you have your key light, which is your main light on your subject.
Yeah,
you have your fill light,
which can be any source, right?
It can be any source. We're just talking about light, and then you basically have a rim light or a kicker.
But so three light sources.
Three. That's your 3 points.
So points and light sources. It means the same thing.
Okay, look, if you want to argue semantics...
No, but that's what I was saying.
Essentially, but what we're talking about when we get into more specific, and I will talk about this. We will absolutely talk about what is three-point lighting, but it involves lighting ratios.
Okay, forget it.
So what's your key to fill ratio?
I have no idea.
Yeah, typically, like on television, let's say a television show, what is a typical lighting ratio, key to fill ratio on a television show?
I'm going to say
3-1.
I was going to say 80%
3-1.
No?
3-1.
3-1.
That's how we'll get into that. I promise. Now I sound like a smarty pants.
Yeah, you're like, oh, hey, I just know something that you don't. Yeah.
So who is the third king of Spain?
Well, Popeye Jones.
Popeye Jones. I will Google it. Oh, did he play for the Argonauts?
No.
He did. He was running back.
He did not.
Him and Raheem Ishmael that year. Remember the Rocket?
I do remember Raheem Ishmael.
Yeah.
I actually had his CFL card
when they made
CFL cards.
Yeah. Did you get it when he was working at Foot Locker? I meant to say Footloose.
Notre Dame. That's where he played his college football. See, sports trivia I'm good at.
Really?
Other stuff, forget it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So who's Popeye Jones?
Do you really want to know?
Yeah.
You want to Google
it? I've heard of him, but I'm not going to Google
it. He played for the Toronto Raptors, and he was very unattractive. I don't want to say that because it's not like, hey, I'm Brad Pitt, but he was one of the more unattractive basketball players in the history of the game.
If the two of you squared off and fought...
He would kick the crap out of me. But guess what? He was an exceptional rebounder. I was a big Toronto Raptors fan, had season tickets from day one of the franchise. He was one of the early... fan favorites for the Raptors. Great rebounder.
Better than Bill Laimbeer?
Different type of player.
Okay.
But
wasn't he a rebounder?
No, he was, but he was a
Rodman.
Yes, more like that style of player. Yeah. One-dimensional, fantastic. Robin was a good defender as well. Papa Jones primarily a good rebounder.
Boring.
Yeah.
All
right. But you don't have to Google it.
Yeah, well, great. All right.
That's it.
Rim light. What is rim light, first of all? Okay, just tell people what rim light is.
It's kind of when you light up the edge around something.
It creates that rim of light around something. Yeah. Like usually it's like around their hair or like it's like a backlight. So you're basically backlighting your subject, but you still want to expose them properly. Or maybe you don't. Maybe you just want to rim light them. Maybe that's it.
In a silhouette.
It could be whatever you want. I'm not bossing you.
Yeah. Or it could be on a disco ball.
Oh, let's rim light a disco ball.
That's a callback from two episodes ago, isn't it?
Just last episode.
Oh, okay. Forget it then.
Yes, well,
wasn't that big of a callback.
You shouldn't have had all that cough syrup.
All right, then.
So, yeah, it's also known as a kicker.
Yes.
So, also known as a, what else?
I don't know.
I don't know either. So, great. That's the challenge, rim light. Websites. Where can people find all your disco ball shots?
I don't think they're anywhere but on the Two Hosers website.
Right. Okay, yeah. We'll skip ahead. What about your other stuff?
Schwartzchronicles.com.
Oh, I can't wait to go there and see all the magical things.
Yes, the amazing stuff.
And
that
sounds sarcastic, but I actually do read it all the time.
Okay.
So I do like it. So.
And your blog?
My stuff you can find always at alanetridge.com. The two of us at twohosers.com, which you can find wherever you want to. Find out about us, Two Hosers on the Twitter. We got our Flickr site on there. You can listen to us through iTunes, which I recommend. Love iTunes.
Okay, and you took a picture a little while ago of us podcasting, and is that going to go up with this episode?
Oh, I think I put it up last week.
Oh, behind the scenes? Oh, you already put it up. I see. I haven't looked at it, so.
Yeah, Google it. I put it up under Popeye Doyle. Wow, we're really beating that up.
Do you have a poster of Popeye Doyle?
I wish I did. Yeah, he's played by Gene Hackman. There you go. Spoiler alert.
Okay.
All right, that's it for this week. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.